shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free.
The Herald of Truth broadcast is on the air, a program of spirit and truth dedicated to teaching the way of God more perfectly. These broadcasts contain keys to help unlock knowledge and reveal hidden truths of the Bible in these last days. Christians, called to a higher level of understanding, will be given Bible-based solutions to their personal as well as national problems. They will want to find out more about their part in God's plan. Our mailing address is Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas, 72602, and will be given again at the end of this broadcast.
Good evening. This is Brother Mike of Kingdom Identity Ministries welcoming you to another one of our first of the month Kingdom Concepts broadcasts. We're being heard tonight over WWCR 4.840 megahertz. That's transmitter 3. We've been on that transmitter for several years, but I'm very pleased tonight to announce that we're also being simulcast on transmitter 4, which is 5.890 megahertz. We've been able to do this through the support of our listeners, so I thank you for that. And I might mention at this time that if anybody would like to run our broadcast on their local radio station, or a group of people run it on some station in your area, we'd be pleased to make the arrangements to do so if you would like to pay for that. Anyway, we're being heard on 4.840 and 5.890 megahertz on WWCR, and we always appreciate your reception reports. WBCQ has changed frequencies. The FCC made them change frequencies, so we're being heard on 7.490 megahertz on WBCQ. Both WWCR and WBCQ have internet streams, but you can get the clearest internet stream by going to our website, kingidentity.com, KINGIDENTITY.com. Go to our radio page, go to the bottom, and you'll see a black box with the monthly Kingdom Concepts broadcast, and there's several streams there, Windows Media, Real Player, MP3, Winamp, and so on. So that will be your clearest stream. Tonight, we're again going to be speaking on the subject of biblical money and the economy. And my guest host, again, will be the man who has looked into the subject for many years. He's a biblical money expert, and I'm pleased to welcome back to the broadcast, Bruce McCarthy. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mike. How are you tonight?
Just fine. You doing okay?
Yes, sir.
Why don't we start with doing a little bit of a summary from last month on the subject of just what is biblical money, what is lawful money, and then we'll get into some subjects that we weren't able to cover last month.
All right. I guess what we'll do is we'll probably contrast what I call in my book lawful money versus legal plunder. And lawful money is predicated upon some substance, something which God has created, which can be used as the medium of exchange or as the intermediate substance of two or more exchanges, something which has an exchange value or parity in the marketplace and would therefore constitute wealth, and would, because it is a substance, conform to the law of just weights and measures, wherein God commands us to have a perfect and just weight, a perfect and just measure, that our days would be prolonged in the land which he has given us. And so that requires, if you're going to have just weights and measures, something to be weighed or measured. In contrast to the system that exists in the world today, where what we have are units of measure, which measure absolutely no tangible thing. In this case, in the United States, we use the word dollar, which was once a unit of measure that measured a quantity of silver or gold in coin form and was defined by statute as such. And what we've done is we have morphed into a system, it took about 200 years for that to happen, where we now have dollars which measure absolutely nothing. And the beauty for the tyrants, of course, under that system is that they can create all of the nothing that they want out of nothing for absolutely nothing. No cost to themselves. And by that, they have managed to enslave the entire non-bank population of the globe, which is many billions of people, who must labor for numbers, in this country called dollars, in other countries called euros, and whatever the other unit of measure might be, and you're in maybe the Asiatic countries. All of those units of measure measure absolutely nothing, which the first party gets an unlimited quantity to itself at no cost to itself and is able to therefore plunder or expropriate the production of all of the non-bank public. So that's kind of where we are.
Right. We touched briefly upon some substitutes that weren't lawful money that patriots advocate, including the Lincoln greenbacks. I'd like to review that a bit and then go on to some of the systems that patriots advocate. First, let me give our toll-free number to any listener who'd like to contribute to the broadcast tonight. It's 877-924-7722. 877-924-7722. As I said, it's toll-free. You can remember it by 877-YAWS-RACE. And Bruce can answer your questions, or you may have comments on the subject. Like I was saying, the patriots advocate various substitutes for lawful money. Would you like to touch on that?
Oh, sure. There are a number of myths. In fact, I have a chapter in the book entitled Myths Molded by the Godmen. In fact, there are actually some more myths than I had even thought to put in there. But one of the myths, of course, is that President Lincoln had issued debt-free money in the form of United States notes. That is probably one of the most popular myths that has been going around probably since before you and I were born. And, well, of course, he was obviously long before we were born, but then there were people who bought into the notion way back then. What most people, of course, are not aware of is that the people who voted for that legislation back in 1861 knew that they were violating the Constitution, and they also knew that they were issuing something that was not money. It's unfortunate that people somehow think that you can print numbers on a rag and turn that into money, but there was a senator from New Hampshire by the name of Collamer who recognized right off the bat that this wasn't money. In fact, I could quote a statement made by him, and he said in an exhaustive argument against the legal tender bill, he stated that he was not willing to say to the man, or a man, here is my note. If I do not pay it, you must steal the amount from the first man you come to and give him this note in payment. He recognized that a note wasn't the payment of anything, as do the courts. The courts have acknowledged over and over again that a note is not payment. It is only a promise to make payment. And, of course, what Lincoln had done was to remove the promise altogether. But there was the anticipation that after the war was over and the Treasury was restocked with silver and gold, that those notes would be paid down, put out of circulation, and gold and silver coinage would again be put back into circulation. It was called the Resumption Act. Unfortunately, the Lincoln greenbacks created in the minds of the American people a legitimacy for legal tender. And the public began to acquiesce to the fraud and the plunder. And Abraham Lincoln actually set the stage for what would later on be the Federal Reserve System. It was done incrementally. That's basically how we managed to get into sin, isn't it? It's by the leaven of the Pharisees. And
well, as you pointed out, some people just want to adopt the Federal Reserve System and make it part of the national government.
Precisely. In fact, that's the bill that Congressman Dennis Kucinich from Ohio has placed before the House. And in that bill, of which I have a copy, the wording that is used in there is that they will incorporate the Federal Reserve System into the executive branch of the government. That is, as you and I have talked about before, that is strict compliance with the fifth plank of the Communist Manifesto, which advocates centralization of credit in the hands of the state by means of a national bank with an exclusive monopoly in state capital. That is the monopoly that if people will look carefully at all of the books that are out there from monetary reformers, whether it be Warren and Thorne from years ago, they'd put out a book called The Truth in Money. Pastor Sheldon Emery, I hate to bring his name up in a derisive sort of way. I mean, I don't dislike the man, but he advocated that Congress take over the central bank. There is no such power constitutionally and certainly not biblically to take over a central bank and then do the stealing from the public directly instead of sharing in the process with a privately owned bank. The Bible says thou shalt not steal, and it doesn't say that government may do so even if it has a legitimate and a wonderful sounding program. Theft is against God's law. So, yes, I'm glad you brought that up, because that has been my pet beef for quite some time, and it was actually the primary inspiration for even writing this additional book. There are so many advocates of nationalization of the Federal Reserve System and putting it into the hands of the federal government and then letting the government steal from us directly. And one of the problems of that, one of the consequences is that the public, once again, will have absolutely no control over that central government. Because one of the controls that you have as a master, if indeed the public thinks that we are the master and the government is supposed to be the servant, which was a biblical concept, the only way you can actually be a master is if you pay your servant. And if there is nothing that you have that your servant needs to get paid in, then there's no way you can fire your servant. Because in America, the servant has the printing press. And the servant is telling the masters, the public out here, what will happen and what will not happen. And the public has no control over that, because the public is dependent upon those numbers called dollars that originate now out of Washington. So the master-servant relationship in government was completely reversed once we introduced the Federal Reserve System. And that's something that people have not given an awful lot of thought to. In fact, it was President James Blaine who had said that whoever controls the volume of money or credit in any nation is absolute master of all industry and commerce. And many of these reformers will quote Blaine. President Garfield. I'm thinking of James Blaine, who was Speaker of the House in Congress. No, that was President James Garfield who had said that. They'll quote him, but then fail to recognize that what they're doing is that they're proposing that Congress be absolute master of all industry and commerce by giving them the authority to do what the Federal Reserve is currently doing, which makes no sense to me. It seems very inconsistent.
Reminds me of the biblical verse, Proverbs 22:7, where the borrower is servant to the lender.
Absolutely. I don't think there's anybody who's ever gone in debt, particularly with a 30-year mortgage, who hasn't gotten an inkling that he has been enslaved. And in the situation of the Kucinich bill, the federal government is going to be the lender of all of the so-called dollars. The rate of interest that's going to be charged, for those who think there won't be any interest, the rate of interest, according to the bill, will be 8%. That's assuming that they don't revise the bill later on, which is one of the things that we always do and always see in legislation. In fact, that's how the Federal Reserve Act got passed to begin with, that they actually had modified the legislation to get it passed. And the whole idea was, according to, I'm trying to think of the name of the individual, name slips my, Paul Warburg had said that we will change that legislation after we get it passed. And so through the revision process, they got whatever they wanted. But you can secure support for your legislation by watering it down to make it appealing to everybody, even your opponents. But once the legislation has been passed, you begin then working on those provisions that are necessary to tighten it up to become the tyrannical system that you wanted in the first place. And that was accomplished.
Well, they do that over and over, including with the income tax.
Well, look what they did to Social Security. I mean, people thought that they were actually going to be able to receive a Social Security check without ever having it being taxed. And it was quite a few years ago that they began taxing the proceeds from Social Security. They can do that. Yeah, they can do that. They can change the rules any way they want because they're the grantor and the public out here is the beggar who is begged in and is not a sovereign in these contractual relationships between themselves and government.
And we very briefly last month spoke about the inflation in Germany in the 1920s. Now, Hitler turned the economic crisis around with an economic system based on the GNP, and some patriots advocate this system. I believe you think that it's not sustainable. Would you comment on that particular economic system?
Yeah, I would like to, because that's one of the things that I did not directly address in my book, and I've even wondered how I could find a space without increasing the number of pages in the book. But that subject has come up from time to time. It's not generally spoken of, but every once in a while you hear somebody talk about the gross national product being used to back the issuance of notes. That is the system that we currently have. And let's start by defining gross national product. Gross national product is simply the sum total of all the economic transactions within an economy over a specific period of time, usually 1 year. And so if I spent $1 with you and, to get something, and then you turn around and spent a dollar with somebody else to get something, the GNP is up to 2. And then somebody takes that $1 bill and spends it with somebody else, the GNP is up to 3. All you're doing is adding up all the transactions. Now, the very idea that one party, let's say me, could write claim checks against another party's assets, say yours, is absurd. I obviously can't write checks against your earnings unless you give me permission to do so. Likewise, McDonald's Corporation can't write checks or notes against the assets of Burger King. I can't write notes or claim checks against you or your assets. And likewise, the federal government has no authority, no legitimate authority certainly, to write claim checks against the production or the wealth of the American people, and then make the American people liable for the payment on a government-issued note. And this is one of the areas that people misunderstand, because the definition of the word payment itself means that you have the party who is responsible to make the payment paying the party who is responsible to be paid. And most people don't recognize who the party is responsible to make payment. When the Federal Reserve, for example, issues a note, unless the Federal Reserve buys that note back at par, one for one, in dollar quantities of silver or gold, there is no payment. No matter how many times that note circulates through the economy, no matter how many goods and services appear to be moved in the direction of a so-called purchaser, there is never any payment. All you have is compensation. And what you have are people who are compensating you for the loss you took when the first party gave you that instrument and confiscated what you produced. If I were the government or the Federal Reserve, both working in symbiosis, and I issued you, Mike Hallamore, a government check in exchange for something that you produced, we would be stealing that from you, because we will not pay on that instrument at par in anything. What we're telling you to do is what Senator Collamer from Vermont said in 1861, that he would not go to the man and say, here is my note, I won't pay it, so you go find somebody who you can steal something from with that note. That's exactly how this system operates. And people understood that in 1861. So what you would have to do is you'd have to take the Federal Reserve note or the government check, and turn around and find somebody in society from whom you could confiscate an equal, or hopefully equal, quantity of something of value. You didn't get paid, because the wrong party is being called upon to do the paying.
Kroger Grocery Store isn't a caller, but I remember sitting in on a lecture of yours a number of years ago, and part of this, you mentioned that like a watermelon would be part of the GNP. You eat the watermelon, and therefore you lost part of the bank for the system.
Yeah, that was a good example. In fact, I had that in the back of my mind. If we went down the road and we saw somebody selling watermelons for $5 a piece, and we bought one, went down the road to a rest area, carved it up and ate it, then what we should legitimately do is go back to the watermelon salesman and say, you know, tear up that $5 bill. Well, why would I do that? Well, because we just ate the backing for it. It is now an unbacked $5 bill because that watermelon was part of the GNP.
Let's go to Clayton in Missouri on line two. He's been waiting a little bit. You're on the air, Clayton.
I have a question for your guest, Tom. It looks like that the current economic and financial system that we have, the global system, is about ready to collapse underneath all this debt. I want to ask your guest, what does he think is going to happen? Does he believe it's going to collapse, and does he believe that the bankers have something to replace it?
Oh, sure. There is a replacement for the system. The replacement is going to most likely be either a global currency, or they may come up with a North American Union currency to replace the one that we currently have. This has been done several times throughout history. In Germany, for example, back in 1923, they had a revaloration and reissue. I'm getting a feedback here. I don't know if Jason can take care of that. Something has happened since we've gotten this call, Mike. At any rate,
Clayton, but go ahead.
Okay, well, hopefully, I'm not getting that. So, but hopefully I can give him an ad.
Yeah, he should be listening, hopefully, on the air.
The German Deutschmark unit of measure depreciated so rapidly that people were paid on a daily basis, because if they waited until tomorrow to get paid in those numbers, they would be almost worthless. It was an incredible period of time between 1921, 1922, 23. And so what ultimately the Germans did, they came up with a revaloration idea where you turned in 1 trillion, that's spelled with a T, tango, 1 trillion Deutschmarks, and you traded it in and got what was called a Rentenmark. The rate of exchange was 1 trillion to 1. Because the numbers were becoming so grossly unmanageable. And they managed to infuse belief in that system into the people to get that to work for a period of time. In Argentina, Brazil, Peru, Mexico, they would have revaloration rates of 30 to 1 or thereabouts, maybe even more. And you would turn in an old, maybe Cruzeiro, and get a new cruzado. They would just change the unit of measure for their new currency, which would be a unit of measure that measured nothing once again. And they would play the game all over. But each time you do that, the masses become poorer. People who had
manipulate the masses by a crisis. That's the way they always forward their agenda. Some people are saying that the current Occupy movement, which apparently they have some understanding of corporate greed or Jewish greed, but they don't seem to have a solution, and they seem to be manipulated. And some people are saying that the demonstrations are going to be used to call for a World Bank, as the Pope called for, or perhaps a tax on every financial transaction made.
Yeah, well, the crisis is an economically engineered crisis. The banking system is able to manipulate the value of the units of measure called dollars and such things quite easily by either making them very sparse, calling them in, if you will, by raising the reserve rates, the reserve ratio, or the discount rate. Or they can make them very abundant by lowering the interest rate to just about nothing and just flooding the globe with numbers called dollars. And of course, the more they crank out, the more worthless they become. Each one of those moves has a desired effect for the bankers, but an undesirable effect for the public at large. It's a system of expropriation, is what it simply is. And they can tell you very often.
The Federal Reserve in the first place was that they could prevent the ups and downs in the money system. And they actually made it worse in the Great Depression and what we're going through currently and every other so-called cycle.
Yeah, all a person has to do is to look at the so-called purchasing power of that thing called a dollar. We're down to less than 4% of its original value, and that's the product that the Federal Reserve started off with that was supposed to be equal to 100 cents, and it's now down to less than 4 cents. So in almost 100 years, we're now down to 4% of the purchasing power of their quote-unquote product. So obviously they didn't succeed in a stable value. And then if you look at the ups and downs that the marketplace has gone through, the worst depression that hit Wall Street, I think, was 1982, prior to the one that we're in right now. And that's when Pennsylvania Central Railroad was losing something like $3 million a month. That was the worst Wall Street panic that exceeded the collapse of 1929, but it was much more brief. And the percentages of loss were greater than the 1929 collapse. But yes, Clayton has asked certainly a most important question. Is this system going to collapse? Well, a person would look at it and say, it is collapsing. As Voltaire had once said, all paper money reaches its ultimate value, zero. And ours has just about reached that. So that is a type of collapse. You cannot keep these systems going for very long. 100 years is about as far as you can go with them. And so what they'll do is they'll angle for another one to replace the existing one. But we will never go back to hard money. In fact, I can take the word hard out of that, and I can just simply say we will never go back to money because we don't have a monetary system now. We haven't had a monetary system since 1965. The United States is on a 100% credit system, and credit is intangible. You can't see, smell, hear, taste, or touch it. The entire globe is on a credit system. We are not heading for a monetary collapse. This is the first time in world history that nobody is using anything as money, which should make the Revelation letter very interesting for people who are Bible students and interested in eschatology. We have a one-world monetary system, which is a system of no money. No one in the world uses anything as money. They just use different units of measure to measure absolutely nothing, which is created on the books of the various central banks and commercial banks that are under them all around the world.
Well, speaking of Revelation, over in Revelation 18, which talks about the fall of Babylon, it says it took place in one day, or it's going to take place in one day. In other words, very quickly. Sometimes when I read the current news and then read Revelation, what's happening in the stock market, and then read, oi, oi, Babylon is falling, I think that we're in that period of Revelation 18. I know that the Jews always overplay their hands. So do you believe it's going to collapse very suddenly?
I think it even speaks of it collapsing in an hour. Whether it's a little literal hour or not, it suggests that it can take place in a very short period of time. That I believe it can certainly do. Because all of the economies of the globe have been tied together electronically. There's nothing out there that we're using as money. It's just information and just bits of information. How does anyone in your listening audience know that he has anything in his bank account? What's in the account? Absolutely nothing. No tangible thing is in any bank account. Anyone who was born after 1947 has never cashed a check. I mean, there is no cash there. And when you became old enough to open up a bank account, you'd have to be born about 1947. And if you were born after 1947, you've never cashed a check in the United States. And the Federal Reserve will tell you that in a book called I Bet You Thought, page 7, Federal Reserve Bank of New York. Banks don't keep cash and checking accounts. So, yeah, there's a collapse that's occurring. But I believe that the bankers are going to pull a rabbit out of the hat. I believe that they're angling for a global currency, that they basically have the confidence of the general public. And the general public is scared to death. They really don't. The public generally doesn't have any option but to believe in this system because there is almost no fresh air, no truth out there that is offering an alternative to this madness. And so the public doesn't know what else to do except to preserve the banks, and the banks are the leeches.
And of course, if somebody like Ron Paul criticizes the banking system and the Federal Reserve, he's smeared by the public media.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, with the power of the printing press, in fact, it goes beyond the printing press at this point, because now most of the so-called funny money is electronic. It doesn't even exist in Federal Reserve note form. When you can create dollars out of nothing in unlimited quantity, there's nothing you can't buy. And so they've basically bought up all the media. They've bought up all of the opinion-making organizations in the country. And nobody's going to resist it. You know, the love of money is the root of all evil. Well, we don't even have any money. It's the love of credit. And they get it for nothing, and we don't.
Well, they've bought up a lot of the businesses that were mom-and-pop family businesses, which is actually a subject I'd like to bring up to you. It used to be that you'd have a family business or a partnership, and they were interested in the product being manufactured. And, of course, they were also interested in the well-being of their employees. And now they're trading stock at thousands of times an hour, sometimes electronically per minute, and they're only interested in profit. Would you like to comment on the stock system as it pertains to the money system?
Well, that's an interesting topic. I don't spend much time looking at the stock market, and I've never played the stock market. But the whole idea of stocks, we thought at one time when we were growing up, was that you invested in a company that had a good product, and if you believed in the product, and you would give that company your financial backing, and you expected or hoped to get a return on your investment. And now you have people sitting in front of their TV sets all day long. I mean, hour after hour. And they're day traders. And they wait for the stocks to move in a certain direction for as long as they think that it ought to move in that direction. And then they dump the stock and go get another one. And all they're doing is riding ups and downs. And so in that kind of a marketplace, stability is not desirable. You and I, almost all of your listeners, most likely want stability in the economy. But the people who speculate in this economy want nothing but instability, because you want to be able to buy low and sell high, and you want the market to constantly go up and down. Well, you can't build a society. You can't build a society out of that way.
Like China, because more profit, but they could care less about the place or the local industry itself.
Yeah, over in China, I guess, I don't know what the pay scale is right now, but a couple of years ago, it was only $3 a day, and those people were putting in 12 to 14-hour days, 6 days a week. You know, that's what the labor market is becoming in the United States, because our children, for the first time in American history, have been put on a playing field which has been defined by slave labor. And since we have no import duties, imposts, tariffs, then the only way the American youth coming out of school or college can compete with Chinese slave labor is to do that kind of labor at that kind of pay scale. And we see that happening in American industry today, where you get a job for General Motors working at a automotive or truck plant. You don't have the same pay scale that people had 5 and 10 years ago. There are no benefits, no retirement, and you are a permanent, temporary help. You have no knowledge that you're going to have the job tomorrow. You have no assurance of a job tomorrow. And that's the way all of the major companies are beginning to operate. So,
well, and some of the companies are actually the Chinese companies or the Japanese or whatever operating in this country.
Yeah, and I was talking with somebody who works in a plant that I think it's a Japanese plant. And he was told that working in this plant, you're working in Japan. This is not American territory. This is Japan. And that's a plant in on U.S. soil. Well, it was once U.S. soil.
Well, I know locally the Tyson chicken plants, I'm told, that employ a lot of these Mexicans, including illegals, it's hard for a white man to work there because they're discriminated against. I've heard that several times where people try to get a job there, but they were discriminated against. So this is taking place right in our own country.
Bruce, why don't you at this point give some information on your new book? I know that since we spoke last month, you've actually expanded a little bit more. If you'd like to give some contact information.
Okay. Thank you for mentioning that. The book, last time we were on, the book was 92 pages. The book has gone to 100 pages and has been revised even in the first 92 somewhat. It's available directly from me currently, Bruce G. McCarthy, at 33563 State Route or Route, if you happen to be from another part of the country, 537 Graysville, that's the color gray, Graysville, Ohio, 45734. I will make this way. This is still a pre-production or publication copy. There's still a few revisions that are going to be made yet, minor ones. We'll offer the book at $15, Babble Bucks each, or two for 20. That way you can have a lending copy. If most of you people are like me, you want to put material in somebody else's hands, but there's also a slight chance that you won't get the book back because people have a way of not returning things, so at least you won't lose your copy. So two copies for 20, one copy for 15. You know, when we brought up the subject of foreign labor and so forth and foreign factories, it reminds me of this thing called the Law of the Flag, and I think some of your listeners will be familiar with this, and you can look it up in Black's Law Dictionary. But when you go aboard a ship and contract with the captain of the ship, you contract under the flag that is being flown by that ship. And when you pass a factory that has a meatball, you know, Japanese flag, or maybe a Chinese flag, that's flying over that factory. When you go to that factory to contract for a job, you're contracting under that flag. So it's a foreign jurisdiction, and we've got all of we have lots of foreign jurisdictions now on American soil. These EB-5 free trade
profit and buying up a lot of property. Actually, they just introduced a bill, I believe, in Congress where anybody who spends, what is it, $300,000 on one house or two houses can get a green card. So you're going to have every drug dealer from Mexico and all the wealth from China and stuff like that buying a property in the U.S. and automatically getting at least the introduction to citizenship. So it's kind of one ball of wax. It goes down in one area, it goes down in all areas. I'd like to invite our listeners to call in. Our number is toll-free 877-924-7722. Repeat that, 877-924-7722, 877-YAWS-RACE. And when you do call in, please turn your radio down. Some of the other Patriot schemes, or whatever you want to call them, that are going on, one that's fairly recent is the Liberty Dollars. I know that the man that started it's been convicted in court, and it's under appeal. I have a lot of sympathy for what they're trying to do, but it seems a little strange that they have 1 troy ounce silver dollars, as they call it, and they keep varying the amount on the 1 troy ounce sildallion, $10, $20, $50, whatever it has, which seems to contradict the biblical law of just weights and measures. Do you have any comment on the Liberty Dollars?
Oh, I concur with you 100% on that, and that's why I was never able to endorse the NorFed program. That was at least one of the reasons, because, as you said, they had a denomination on the coin that might be $5, $10, or $20, or whatever it might be, and then the weight of the coin would be 1 ounce, 999 fine silver. Well, which is it? Does it weigh 1 ounce, or does it weigh $20? And they were using the word dollar as though it were a unit of psychological value, which is not what it is. The word dollar represents a quantity of silver or gold in coin form. What they appeared to have been doing, however, was putting a price tag on those coins. I guess like you would put a price tag on the windshield of an automobile if you had it for sale out in front of your house. And that is probably the way they were looking at it. You know, you can buy this coin for $20, but it weighs 1 ounce. But that was not a satisfactory program, in my view. What they should have done is just simply stated what the weight of the coin was and I believe it weighed 1 ounce, 999 fine, pure silver. They should have left it at that. And then you negotiate in the marketplace verbally whatever it is you want to trade for it, rather than stamp on the coin a dollar denomination. And I guess the Treasury or the U.S. government kind of got after them because they were using the word dollar, and as though the federal government has some sort of legitimate claim on that. I don't know that they do, because there used to be privately minted coins back in time that were denominated in dollars, made out of gold or made out of silver by private mints. So I don't know that the federal government has a monopoly on coins. But then, of course, you also had the promissory notes that were being issued in Norfolk. Those promissory notes would expire. They had expiration dates on them. So if you didn't get those things sent in to Norfed to get your gold or your silver, the notes became worthless after the expiration date on them. And I think there were a lot of people didn't notice that.
I didn't notice it. I know that some people have contributed to the ministry, both in the medallions and in the paper notes. And yeah, there were some that were supposedly deposited with the company that was redeemable, and the feds confiscated all that. So unless the court overturns, we're at a loss. A lot of people are at a loss. I like the idea. I just don't think that it was properly implemented. I mean, the idea of going back to lawful gold and silver. What are some of the other Patriot schemes that maybe look good on the surface but are not scriptural lawful money?
Well, social credit is another one that's used. It kind of has an advocacy group up in Quebec province, which has gained some notoriety, I guess, here in the States. And they kind of work together in concert with American Monetary Institute. But again, well, at least they use the right word. It's the word credit. You know, it's not social money. It's social credit. And but it's another, I guess I'll use the word scheme, where the federal government is going to be the sole issuer of the numbers. And once you have authorized that monopoly, then you've done the same thing that you've done with the Federal Reserve. You have licensed the power to steal, because whoever creates the principal sum out of nothing and tells those people who can't do that that they must give up their goods and services to get it, then you have just legalized theft in favor of that party against the non-bank public. And I just can't find any justification for that. I mean, there's just too many social consequences, terrible consequences of continuing down this road. We're suffering from doing it with a private bank in concert with the federal government. And to turn all of that power over to the federal government all by itself, and then take key people from the Federal Reserve System and put them into the government, which they plan to do, is to now shield those people with
total protection. That's essentially what
protection.
We have now. All the Goldman Sachs employees either become head of the Federal Reserve or of the Department of the Treasury, and they just play musical chairs up there, and then they help their own once they get into those positions and do the bailouts.
Right. And so once you've nationalized them, then you have guaranteed their position inside the federal government. And you've now incorporated this phenomenal monopoly, and you've set it in stone, is what you've done. The problem has gone away.
And he just had a question, and then he dropped off. He asked if you would give your contact information again very slowly. So could you do that for the listeners?
Sure. Bruce G. McCarthy, 33563, State Route 537, Graysville, Ohio, 45734.
And your book is $15 or two for $20, right?
Correct. Yeah.
And I'd invite anybody who would like to participate in the program to call 877-924-7722. We've talked a lot about the problems, but how about the solutions? If you had the power, Secretary of the Treasury or what have you, what would you do to restore a biblical money system to America? Not that it's necessarily ever been completely biblical, but what would you do if you had the power?
Well, I guess we'll approach it from that perspective that, okay, we've been somehow elected by a popular vote, and we're sitting at the helm in Washington, D.C., and we've made a State of the Union message to at least inform the American people that they've been living under a fraudulent scheme for the last approximately 100 years, and we're going to go back to the constitutional method, or at least something that's much closer to the constitutional and hopefully biblical in its approach. What would we do? Well, one of the things that could be done, and I think this is where people are probably confused, they wonder, how could we go back to hard money from where we are right now? Well, it's not really quite so difficult, probably, as it would seem. But it wouldn't be a bad idea to probably have an audit of the Federal Reserve System for the purpose of establishing how much gold and how much silver do they have. It's on their books. How much gold and silver do they have that they have confiscated from our parents and our grandparents? Because that's how they got it. They got it through confiscation by overissuing notes that we explain in the book. They do not own it lawfully. That's one of the myths. You know, the bankers own all the gold and so forth, you know, and they, therefore they're going to control us. They do not lawfully own all the gold. They stole it. And so you can get it back. But you have to first off understand how they stole it. And then you go get it back. But what you do is you audit the Federal Reserve to find out how much gold and silver they have of ours and to find out where it is, because it most likely isn't even in this country any longer. And then you, send the Air Force on a peacekeeping mission, and that is to go get the gold and go get the silver. Load it up into the airplanes, assuming you can get the friendly cooperation of those foreign countries. And if you can't, then you use a letter of marque and reprisal, and you go about it from a constitutional perspective that way. And you go and you obtain the gold and the silver, and you bring it back to the states. You have it stamped into coin form. And this time, do as Thomas Jefferson had suggested in his letter to Alexander Hamilton. You weigh the coins in ounces and fractions thereof. That way we get rid of the confusion over the word dollar, which Jefferson said everybody had to admit in his day that there was great uncertainty in the meaning of the word.
Move just a minute. We do have a caller online, and I'd like to welcome Neil from San Diego, California, West Coast. So how are we coming in there, Neil?
Well, I have a simple older Grundig Yacht Boy AM/FM shortwave radio. And not the proper antenna, so I am getting a reception. It would be better if I had a good antenna on this thing, but I would say that I'm not a heavy listener of shortwave. I tune it in from time to time, and I've got your broadcast, and I'm very pleased to have discovered it. I would like to encourage, in case there are other folk out there who are not listening on the internet. I don't know if you're broadcasting simultaneously on the internet, but if they're like myself, not with the greatest reception, that you repeat again or multiple times the resource for the book. If I may ask, pardon me for this, do you broadcast at this time every Sunday with this program, or is this a special program?
No, every Sunday. Now, the first Sunday of each month is a live broadcast, our Kingdom Concepts broadcast, and then the subsequent Sundays are pre-recorded, various type messages. And we are now on the two transmitters for WWCR and the one on WBCQ. Are you listening on 5.890?
No, I'm listening at 4840.
Oh, well, that antenna goes somewhat north and south. You'd probably get better reception on 5.890, which is the transmitter that we just started this week for some time on this simul broadcast. And
well,
that goes east and west.
I will try that frequency when I conclude here with you gentlemen. I just want to thank you for the nature of this program. And it's one in which I think our country needs to hear more of, hence the education that you're providing us and my encouragement to repeat the resource for this book, if you will. I got
okay,
part of the address.
We'll do that, and we'll also have at the end of the broadcast our own contact information. We have information on various subjects, including, I might add, a comic book called The Temple of Imaginary Money,
which is something that's simple for people to understand on the money subject. And the two-page introduction is actually written by our guest, Bruce McCarthy. And then it goes into cartoon form. And we asked $3 for that. And then we have a book by Pastor Burton Comprey called Babylon's Money that we asked $2 for. And I'll
okay.
be having Bruce give his information again. So I'd like to thank you, Neil, for the call. Did you have any questions?
Well, I'll follow up, if I may, because I tuned in already in progress. If you could repeat the name of, I'll say, your ministry as well, because I don't know who you are. I'm sorry.
That'll be given at the end of the broadcast, but it's Kingdom Identity Ministries. And we have a website, www.kingidentity.com, KingIdentity.com. Incidentally, if you go to our radio page and then scroll down some, you'll find a link for our archive broadcast. So this broadcast will be up within the next couple of days anyway. And
okay.
all of our other broadcasts are archived there also. And they're also available on CD.
Okay, KingdomIdentity.com. All right, all right. And in the nature of a specific question, what might, and you may have already covered this, but what might be the consequence of, I'm going to use this characterization, of greater intervention on the part of the West, U.S., NATO, in terms of our monetary condition, I will say, when war breaks out with Iran? I think we're headed in a direction of conflict with Iran, and I have a suspicion that there's going to be greater consequence to that than what most folk are suspecting, and it may indeed be linked to the financial structure of and soundness of our monetary system. So I'll leave. Leave with that question. You may have an angle on it that I would not perceive at this point, but I suspect we're headed into greater financial distress, and there may be a linkage to this matter. So thank you very much for your information.
Well, thank you for calling, Neil. Bruce, we have less than 3 minutes left. We do have another caller from Pennsylvania, so let me ask you to try to answer as quickly as possible, and we need your contact information again, too. So,
Neil has brought up a good point, because there is definitely a connection between banking and war. In fact, there is a chapter in the book which is called Credit in Uniform, which deals with that subject. In fact, the subject of war and its connection to banking, which is very profitable in wartime, is brought up several times throughout the book. I guess I can't say too much more than that because of time constraints.
We've got less than 2 minutes. Jim, from Pennsylvania, you're on the air.
Yes, Bruce. What was the name of that Federal Reserve Bank book or booklet that you mentioned?
I mentioned one called I Bet You Thought, if that's the one that I mentioned where
yes.
banks don't keep cash in checking accounts. Yeah, that's a 1980 publication. I don't know if you can still get that one. It came out of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. And that was page 7. I quote, throughout the book, I quote heavily from the Federal Reserve System, which, at least a few years ago, was very gracious to provide you with all sorts of information telling you exactly how the scam works in language that's quite understandable. And so we rely upon them to actually basically expose themselves. So no
one has less than a minute. Why don't you give the callers your mailing address so they can get the book? And it goes into much greater detail than we've been able to tonight.
Okay. Well, they can contact me directly, Bruce G. McCarthy, 33563, State Route 537, Graysville, Ohio, 45734. And the book is Lawful Money versus Legal Plunder. $15 each or 2 for $20. I don't think you'll be disappointed with the book.
Well, thank you very much for being our guest again tonight, Bruce. And,
enjoyed it.
Like I said, we have information both on the money situation and on many other topics, and our contact address will be given here just in a minute. May Yahweh bless each and every one of you.
We pray that your spiritual ears have received today's message
and that you were fed with strong meat relevant to solving the needs of our nation and Christian civilization everywhere. Herald of Truth is sponsored by Kingdom Identity Ministries through the financial support and prayers of listeners like you who love the truth of God's Word and want to see it broadcast throughout the land to awaken His people. If you would like a
CD
of today's message, tell us the date and station to which you are listening and send a donation to cover our cost plus help with radio time to Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas, 72602. We would appreciate donations made by our international listeners to be in U.S. funds. For a free introductory packet of information, including our doctrinal statement of beliefs, plus lists of books and tapes to aid you in your study of biblical truth, write Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas, 72602, USA. Or request this material by calling 870-741-1119. That's 870-741-1119. Visit our internet website by going to www.kingidentity.com. Type www.kingidentity.com. We invite you to listen regularly to Herald of Truth broadcast for more dynamic messages proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom at this same time and station.